So I'm tantalised by this male infertility story that you've got, because I always thought that they'd got all that together, but clearly not.
Yes, so 1 in 9 Australian couples actually experience infertility, and often the spotlight tends to be on the woman. So when infertility is being investigated, it's the woman who tends to go through lots of testing and hysteroscopy and referrals. But now there's the first ever Australian guidelines for male infertility, which gives a bit of a framework, aims to reduce some of the stigma. I spoke with Professor Robert McLaughlin, who's Medical Director of Healthy Male and Consultant Andrologist for the Monash IVF program.
30 years ago, the man was rarely seen. His partner was given a sperm jar and, get John to fill that up for me and away we go. That's not acceptable, and we have worked for 20 years to try and change the culture in conjunction with the major societies that oversee this care. And it's a little bit diverse because they may see a urologist, they may see an IVF specialist who's usually a gynecologist, or they may see a hormone specialist, an endocrinologist like I was originally. So it's a bit of a broad church because there's no single person that necessarily sees all the couples.
This is the first ever male infertility guideline of its kind in Australia. Why is it so essential, and what are you hoping that it's going to change on the ground?
The development of these guidelines really comes out of the recognition that male infertility is a very common and important problem. It's a major independent cause of infertility and a contributor to infertility, such that maybe half of cases have a male sole factor or contributory factor. So it's a big deal. We also know that there are reversible causes within that group of people, and also that there are diseases which are more common in those men. Now, that compels you to realise that men need to be seen. They need to be evaluated, just like their partner. They have health concerns which must be addressed. So we've had to work with the different societies, and we've had some success over the years. We've developed a system now where the outcomes of IVF in Australia are recorded according to the reason the man was infertile. We also have recognition in the guidelines that oversee IVF programs that their clinical service must include evaluation of the male, either within or through collaboration. But one further step from that is to look at the evidence of what best practice is. And the Europeans and the Americans have been doing this for a long time, and they have very credible guidelines which they have done all the work on. And so what we've done is to take those guidelines and filter them through an Australian lens, if you like, to see what's relevant, the health resources available within Australia, so that we've come up with 80 guidelines for best practice. And of course, the hope is that this will improve care. I mean, that's where we're heading, right?
You just said before, Robert, though, that it's been quite common in a heterosexual couple that the woman tends to have the spotlight on her and the male partner might be handed a semen analysis. What is the recommendation now? Is it that if in a heterosexual couple there are fertility issues, that both get investigated at the same time now?
Yes. Yes.
And what does that look like?
Well, it means meeting the man. It means talking about his medical history, examining him and doing some basic tests. Now, clearly that will involve a semen test, but also often the hormonal levels that control the testis and potentially other tests depending upon what they show. So occasionally you get serious diseases which present with male infertility. And I have had some classic examples in the past of men who have come along with a very low sperm count. And that was due to the fact that their pituitary gland wasn't working to drive the testicle because they had a pituitary tumour. You know, that's worth knowing about, right? So the care changes on a dime there. Or you have men with a blockage to sperm flow, which may be surgically remediable. So there are important things you might pick up. Another perspective of this is gender fairness, because if you don't assiduously look for a male factor and you say, oh, well, there's enough sperm for an IVF attempt, we'll do that, what you're doing is putting the female partner potentially through an unnecessary experience. I mean, IVF is not free fun, or it's a hard work, right? So you want to avoid that. So there's that aspect. And as I also said before, there are some conditions such as testicular cancer or testosterone deficiency, which are much more common in this group of men. You need to know about that. So that's why it's mandatory in these guidelines to see the guy and do these evaluations.
A lot of women will go and see a GP for a preconception consult, so before they even try to conceive. Do men need to think about anything in particular, preconception, before you even try to get pregnant in order to improve, I can see you getting excited, improve semen quality to increase the chances of conception? Tell us.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the major recognitions of the last 10 years is preconception planning is a thing for men. You know, you only use your sperm to make a baby 1, 2, 3, 4 times in your whole lifetime. You have a responsibility to make sure that that sperm is in its optimal health. Now, if you are smoking or you're way overweight or you have other diseases which need to be addressed, it can negatively impact those sperm and therefore your offspring. So there's plenty of animal data, but also human data, that if you are overweight and diabetic and poorly controlled, the offspring that you have will be imprinted with some of those adverse long-term health consequences. Now, you know, what guy doesn't want to give his child the best chance of a healthy life? So there are two people involved here now. You've got the guy who's, you know, got poorly controlled diabetes, or he's overweight, or he's smoking and doing bad things. It's going to shorten his life expectancy. But as well as that, the baby that he aspires to have could get a negative impact from what he's doing. So we clearly do that. It's been true for women for years. Welcome to the club, guys, preconception planning. So when you're thinking about making a baby, you need to get ahead of the game and look after yourself early on.
What I was really hoping to actually touch on was just the stigma, because it tends to be the woman that gets over-investigated and hysteroscopies and then IVF, and the male just, I say to them, has your partner gone and seen their GP and had a semen analysis? And they're like, oh, no.
I think that stigma is declining because you talk about it more. We're talking about it. The newspaper talks about it. 20 years ago, we didn't. So people recognise male infertility as a thing now, and I hope that stigma is declining. You know, it's nobody's fault. It just happens. I'm not sure male infertility is getting more common, you know, biologically, which is a question about, you know, sperm counts falling and the like. There is evidence for that, although it's kind of inconsistent and geographically different. So I'm not quite sure. But we talk about it more because we can do more. Microinjection IVF was 1992, so that's 32 years ago. Before that, many of these people, there was no prospect of having a child, the most severe cases, because the sperm weren't adequate for normal IVF. Now, as you know, with blockages or all sorts of difficult situations, they can have normal children through IVF. And that means people in the past who might have been reticent to even come forward and know that there's a potential avenue for them to have a child together. And one of, I guess, the most remarkable example, which is really a game changer, is the case of Klinefelter syndrome, which is the commonest problem in Australian genetic, chromosomal genetic in men. It's one in 550 men, roughly. That's a lot of men. Virtually all have a zero sperm count and testosterone deficiency. And they inevitably, if they wanted to have a family, was adoption or donor sperm. That's the only way they had. Now, up to 60% of them, with a surgical operation, you can go into the testicle and find sperm within the very small testes and use them. And those sperm are normal, interestingly, even though most of their body has the chromosomal imbalance of an extra X chromosome, the stem cells in the little tiny pockets in their testicle are 46XY, normal chromosomes. So the most remarkable thing that one sees now is the Klinefelter's gentleman who brings in his two genetic children to show you, and after he finished having his treatment, he goes on testosterone therapy, which he needed all the way through. And he's feeling fantastic. So he bounces in to see you saying, I feel so well. Have you met my children? I mean, 30 years ago, you got to be kidding.
Yeah.
And now it can happen. So,
wow.
You know, the fact that so many things can be done now, I think, brings people forward.
That was Professor Robert McLaughlin, who's the Medical Director of Healthy Male.
You're with the Health Report on ABC Radio National.